If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in for another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 250. That's right, 250. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, we are 1/4 of the way to 1,000 episodes.
That's wild. Wondering when that will be. Well, we've been doing this since about 3 years now. We started in, October, November of 2020. So, you know, maybe we'll make it before 10 years. I think that's possible because we're doing this one episode for a while. We did two episodes a week. And we're about to go back two episodes a week soon. So, yeah, I think we can do it before the 10-year mark. It'll be right before FPAS 2030. We'll be heading out, hopefully, to Phoenix, and we'll have hit episode 1,000.
Just made me think of that picture that Mike Carlin posted of the two older gentlemen that were behind us in a picture we took a couple years ago. It was like, you know, Carlin was like, oh, it's Cross and Clegg at FPAS 2068 or whatever. Yeah, so, okay, FPAS. I'm going to throw a random date out there, so... To see 10-year mark would have been, I think we'll do it before then. Actually, you're pretty spot on. I think we'll probably be, maybe mid-2030 season. I could see it. Maybe even earlier than that.
That's weird to think about. I don't want to think that far out.
Dude, I'm already getting, it's already weird writing typing out 2024 in all my content now. It's like, Where did 2023 just go? But it's that time, you know, always got to do the switchover every year. We November start writing about 2024 content, but we have a pretty fun episode in store today. You know, a few of the live podcasts out in First Pitch, Arizona, we're talking about just tough players to rank. But obviously, though, all of them are doing it through more of a redraft light for 2024. So we thought, hey, that'd be a fun episode to do for dynasty purposes. A lot of players are just really just tough to rank right now for one reason or another. And we have a great guest with us to do so. He is the owner of DC Dynasty. And he didn't want me to mention anything else, but I'm going to do it anyways. The 2023 NFBC Online Auction Champion. The champ is here. Cue the John Cena. At LucasBeery33 on Twitter or X, whatever. Lucas Beery joins us. How you doing, Lucas?
I'm doing great. A lot better now that you put that awesome intro out there. So that was pretty neat. But yeah, excited to be talking some tricky players and kind of learning what you guys think, because you sent me this list of players and they're certainly perplexing. So I'm going to need a little bit of crowdsourcing on this one.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're going to do the three of us. You know, we can kind of bounce ideas off each other, talk it all out. And we all kind of added several names to the list and we kind of broke it down by, you know, some of the elite names near the top of most rankings, some like the younger breakout guys and just some other names in general here. I need to get a soundboard, Chris, but it would just have like kind of like what Michael Govier has for Palazzo. Oh, yeah. But I would just have like John Cena's intro music on there. Just like random, completely random stuff. But it's going to be a fun episode. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show's at ToolshedPod. And again, Lucas is at LucasBeery, BIEry, the number 33. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out all of our personal platforms. You know, DC Dynasty for Lucas, Dynasty Dugout for Chris, Toolshed Fantasy for me. Now, we've a lot of content on there, rankings, player write-ups, you know, a lot of good stuff on there. So we all greatly appreciate the support. Let's get right into it now. First name on the list here, a name that Chris put on, and this is a great one to start out with, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Still only, it feels like he's been around forever, which he kind of has, but he's still only 24 years old, been in the league now 5 seasons, and obviously had that one massive year in 2021, had the 48 home runs. But since then, you know, highest OPS in this year was 819, kind of all around the 800 mark outside of that 1 year. But the metrics still look great, Chris. So it's like you look at the metrics and then you look at the surface stats and they don't correlate. You figure like, all right, this is a guy that has a lot better surface stats than he does, but that just hasn't been happening. So okay, what are you doing with him in rankings right now?
It's a great question. I don't know what to do with him in rankings because he's quite polarizing as a player. And I've struggled with what is Vlad Guerrero Jr.? Like, what is his value? Because outside of 2021, in which most of his games or a lot of his games were played in two small minor league parks in Buffalo and then down in Dunedin, he really has just been good. Nothing wrong with being good, but he hasn't been the elite Vlad Guerrero Jr. that we have seen or we saw in 2021, which he hit 48 home runs and slashed .311, .401, .601. So you mentioned like the underlying metrics all still look pretty good. So it's the ball really hard, still runs, you know, high batting averages, or especially a high XBA this year compared to his batting average. He's perplexing in the sense of like, what is the, like, were the last 2 years, quote, down years, or were they just who Vlad is? It's not like that he wasn't getting a ton of at-bats either, because, I mean, he's getting near 700 plate appearances both years, over 700 in 2022 at .607, and then .682 this year. So it's a compiler who's not compiling a ton of big stats like we did, like we saw in 2021. So that's my question, and I don't know what to make of Vlad. I'm hoping that maybe either of y'all can help me and bring to light, because when I look at the profile, I see, okay, still hits the ball extremely hard. He still makes good contact despite the chase rate going up a little bit this year And the sweet spots percentage, which was the amount of balls hit between 8 and 32 degrees, is low. So that's concerning. Obviously, the ground ball rate is still an issue. But ultimately with Vlad, like not striking out, making contact, hitting the ball hard, but not making things happen. So for me, Vlad's tough to rank because we hold on to the upside of 2021. But what is the true talent level? He's 24 years old, so he's still young. But ultimately, is he the player he's been the last 2 years, or is he closer to what we saw in 2021? And I don't know. That's why I put him on here as a hard player to rank.
No, you're absolutely kind of spot on with that. Kind of a lot of similar thoughts I have, where I've gone from being a guy that, you know, went back when we had all the Yordan versus Vlad debates. I was obviously team Yordan, and so kind of, you know, more not a Vlad detractor, but not like one of his biggest supporters, let's say. Then I started defending him when he started dropping way too far down rankings. But I don't know where to put him. Like, you look at the metrics, they look like they should be better. But at the same time, he's never had a ground ball rate less than 45%. And yeah, if he didn't have, like, let's say that he had a normal year in 2021 and didn't have, you know, 44 games in Dunedin with 21 home Dunedin and Buffalo, where he had 21 home runs in 44 games. I'll never forget that metric because I've said it a million times at this point. Like, where would we be valuing him? Would he still be thought of as highly, or is that still carrying him a little bit? I don't know. Lucas, what are your thoughts on Vlad? Like, do you think he's still, like, in that ongoing mock draft we're doing for Dynasty? I think he still went top 20, probably, like, I think in the 16, 17 range, something like that. Do you still value him that highly?
That's a little bit high for me, but if you're kind of looking to have a team that's going to have a sustainable future, I understand going with a younger guy. In the second round of that league, I took Freddie Freeman just because I think he's kind of a top eight, top 10 talent, and in theory, I would be going for it that year. But if you want a team that's going to have a long-term future, I mean, you know, he's a good 10 years, you know, 9 years younger. So I can understand that. But you guys hit on a lot of the themes that I had noted with the ground ball issue, the fact that his monster year was aided by bandbox parks. And that's also baked into the projection. So you can't just look at Steamer's 36 home runs and 242 ISO and take it to the bank because it's right. Still factoring in that monster year. And just kind of looking at him a little bit further, you know, sprint speed in his monster 2021 year went from 45th percentile sprint speed all the way down to 25th percentile for a guy that hits the ball on the ground so much. That's going to rob some extra base hits, going to take, you know, some average points off the top. And I guess one positive note that I had on him was overall the Blue Jays offense was weaker than we all expected. So I think that if that kind of normalizes to a better level, that's going to tack on some of the counting stats. But we're missing more than counting stats. We're missing like 10 home runs from his projection to be good.
Yeah, like 26 home runs for a guy like Vlad. It feels like, obviously, that's still good. You know, nothing wrong with that. But yeah, it feels disappointing. And yeah, you made a lot of good points there. 78 runs. But like to his defense, like you look at how many games, and Chris, you kind of touched on this, like the last, you know, last 4 years, you know, obviously he came up. I mean, was it May of 2019? So in his four full years, even though one of them was the shortened year, he played all 60 games in 2020, missed one game in 2021, missed two games in 2022, and then missed six games last year. So he's missed, what, nine games combined over the last 4 years? So that's pretty damn good. So at least you know you're getting a very high floor. Like the floor is like 25 and 90, you know, out of him and like 260. Like that's bare floor for him. So, you know, you just hope for more, but you know, real quick, you know, there's at least in my rank, is a cluster of four first basemen. You know, Vlad is, you know, at least 4 years younger than the other ones. But real quick, who would you guys take? I think Lucas, you already alluded to this with who you took, but out of Pete, Freddie, Matt Olson, and Vlad Jr., you got to pick one. Who are you picking for Dynasty?
For me, I'll take Matt Olson just because he's going to just be a monster in the counting stats for years to come, and I would project him for the most home runs of those players. His batting average might end up closer to 250 this year, but just being a huge key cog in the Braves offense for me is going to seal it when it's that close for those players.
Yeah, and that offense is going to be absolutely monstrous for the foreseeable future, especially if they keep adding payroll. Chris, I don't know what you guys are doing down there. It's kind of not fair, but Chris, would you go Olson too? Where do you go out of these four?
Yeah, it's close. I think I'd land on Olson, especially if you're in win now mode, just because I truly believe that that power is here to stay, and the counting stats are going to be elite in that lineup. So it's hard to bet against Olsen at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then for the mock draft, Olsen went 12th, Vladdy Jr. 18th, Freddie Freeman 23rd, and Pete Alonso went 32nd. But Tristan Casas, I think, is sneaking up on them, but that's another discussion for another day. The other big name, or kind of elite name on here, Mike Trout. He's the one I put on here because obviously he's Mike Trout, but he's 32-year-old Mike Trout now that has chronic, you know, back issues here that we just don't know how much is he going to play. He's kind of like, you just talk about how much Vlad is playing. You know, we haven't seen a year of 150 plus games out of Trout since 2016. We haven't seen him play over 120 since 2019. You know, he had 119 in 2022, but 82 games last year, 36 in 2021. Maybe he would have in the short in 2020 year. He had 53 games out of 60 that year. Numbers are still good, but obviously the stolen bases have completely evaporated, you know, alternating between one and two each of the last 4 years. Power is still, you know, elite, you know, when he, again, but when he's in the lineup. So at this point, you're not getting the speed, and you're getting, you know, elites, three-category production. Average has still been pretty solid as well. But at this point, he's 32 with these issues that usually don't get better as you age. So it's kind of feels weird to ask this, Lucas, but is Mike Trout still, like, you know, a top 50 dynasty asset? Again, I don't like asking that question because he's been obviously, you know, a stud and one of the best players of all time for the last decade. But at this point in his career, do you think he's top 50?
You know, on paper, it sounds like, it seems like he should be, but for me, he's not, just because I need reliability. And you kind of mentioned it's been, you know, about 7 years since he provided a full season. He used to be able to give you almost a full season's worth of numbers in 100-110 games, but with that strikeout rate creeping up closer to 30%, he's no longer a four category stud with a batting average, because that it could be a liability. So for me, not necessarily a top 50 guy. If it was an on base league, that might be more of a discussion, but even then, I think volume is so important for an aging player. I just don't know what you're going to get out of him.
Right. And like you mentioned, you got to rely on him, you know, 15 teamer. That means he's, you know, your third or fourth guy, 12 teamer, fourth or fifth guy. And yeah, you need to have more reliability in that. So yeah, he's a tough one. And he went 64th in this mock, I believe, to you, Chris, didn't he?
Yeah. I think so. He just kept going, falling to look screw it.
And I was looking at him that I think I was picking like four spots before you that round. And I sat there for a good 10 minutes on the clock. Just, I ended up going with Matt McClain. But I sat there for a good 10 minutes at least, like just looking at Mike Trout. Like, do I take him here? Just because it's, you know, at this point, it's not terrible value. But I don't, Chris, do you have him top 50 anymore? Do you think he can be relied upon as that?
I mean, I've got him like 49th, so just barely inside the top 50. But it's really tough because I think he's like on the cusp of just completely falling out and being like a non-factor in Dynasty, complete like a non-top 100 guy, just because the fact he can't stay on the field. And we've mentioned it. I mean, the metrics are there. I am a bit concerned because we've seen the whiff rate kind of go in the wrong direction. And he struck out way more last year than we've seen in a while. But the strikeout rate has been kind of trending upward. And now he's sitting like the upper 20s, which is, you know, not the Mike Trout that we've known for in his peak years, obviously. I still believe that Trout will go down as one of the greatest players of our generation, maybe of all time. But it's interesting to see him kind of take a step back, especially in like contact rates and even the strikeout rate. So it's concerning, to say the least. He doesn't run, so that's a non-factor in steals. If he stays in Los Angeles, the lineup's going to be horrific. So maybe I'm talking myself out of him being a top 50 guy at this point, because I'm not sure I want to bet on that. Even though I drafted him like 64th, it was a mock, so, you know, whatever, but I don't know. A healthy season with Trout could see him hit 40 and put up really good numbers, but I'm not confident that he can have a healthy season. So I'm kind of out on him in Dynasty.
Yeah, it's tough. And I have a feeling, like, you know, let's fast forward like 10, 15 years, Trout's retired. I feel like we're going to look back on his career kind of like how we look back on Griffey's now, King Griffey Jr. Like, obviously, he'll still go down as one of the all-time greats, but, like, that what-if factor, if he didn't break down in his 30s, you know, similar, like, you know, Griffey was on, obviously, an all-time pace and still had, you know, some of the best numbers ever, but what if he did? What if he was able to play at least, you know, close to every game, even in his 30s? Same with Pujols. I have that thought with Pujols, too. Like, what if his foot didn't give out and, you know, he could have had the all-time home run record? But all those what-ifs. But now we're going over to someone much younger by over a decade. This is one of the names that Lucas put on the list here. He's an elite name. Hasn't had the elite season yet because he was a rookie last year, but definitely an elite name in the dynasty world and baseball world in general. That's Elly De La Cruz. I mean, you, doesn't matter where you look, like the range of like rankings on him and this like thought process on Elly De La Cruz is pretty vast. Like, some people just think he's not going to pan out because of all of the issues he has in plate discipline. But obviously the upside, we saw he went, what was that, 21.53 pace last year, which is insane. You know, so right now I have him top 15, top 20. I think that's kind of where the upside warrants. And obviously if he puts it all together, like he could have a 30-50 year this year, Lucas. So what are your thought? What's your thought process behind Elly De La Cruz right now? Kind of where do you have him ranked?
Definitely going to be in the middle to early part of the second round for me, but he's not a pick for the faint of heart since I think there's a wide variance on him. Obviously, people are drafting to win their league and going for that elite upside, like you had said, but there's still some warts to be ironed out, and he's not a complete player yet. However, we're seeing some of the elite talents like Bobby Witt can take a non-fully finished profile and can still elevate that into roto gold. So I play in a lot of leagues, so I'm going to be okay drafting him on a few teams here and there, but he's not like a kind of guy where I'm going to auto pick him in the second round, because if he doesn't take a step forward, he's going to really hurt you because people are betting on the come big time with De La Cruz.
Right. And there's, you know, massive FOMO possibility here.
Yes.
If he has that, like he could do what Witt did this year and then some. Like,
yeah,
that's obviously the upside we're looking at here. Like I said, he could go 30-50, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised at all. Or I could honestly see him getting demoted back down to AAA at some point, you know, if he's struggling hard just to get his head right. Now, that's, I think that's a possibility too. But I don't know, Clegg, where are you at with Elly right now?
He's a tough eval in reality. Like the upside there, like we know what he's capable of. But I still think there's some major concerns in the profile. And, you know, he's always going to go probably a little higher than he should just because people are going to bet on him becoming like the next Tatis. Like that's kind of always been the talk. It's like, okay, this guy has like Fernando Tatis Jr. upside. So people want to chase that. I mean, the sprint speed's elite. Like he stole 35 bases in the majors last year. So across the board, like he provides the upside. And I think the Bobby Witt comp is pretty interesting and good thought. And I know it's not direct comp, but the fact that there's warts in the game, but he still made it work to be great for fantasy. And I do believe that even despite the issues and concerns, I have concerns like about Ellie's ability to hit breaking balls and perform against them. And if he can fix that, then he's probably going to take off. The power, speed, undeniable. But he's got to be able to lift the ball a little more. We also see him put the ball on the ground, so that's got to get some lift there. And ultimately, those are just going to turn into barrels and more home runs. I just believe that there's 30-30 potential here, but he's got some things to work out to get there. So I'd agree that Ellie's a tough rank, but he's so young and he's so talented that I'd want to bet on him in Dynasty, but I'm not sure I want to pay the cost in redraft as much.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of there with you. I will have zero shares of Elly this year. And if he blows up, then, oh, well, you know, I'll have that FOMO. But yeah, Dynasty, definitely, I want at least one share. I don't have any shares of Elly right now. Hopefully I can change that within the next few months before the season starts. But the fact that he has all those tools and gets to play half his games in the most hitter-friendly ballpark in baseball, it's just like, salivating what he could put up. It's really insane. But I'm moving over to the first pitcher on the list here with Aaron Nola, who obviously just re-signed with the Philadelphia Phillies, 7 years, $175 million, which I think is a pretty solid value. But yeah, you look at what Nola has been And it's really the, you know, the on again, off again, you know, even odd year thing we got going on here, where you look at the last three seasons and even numbered years, 2.37 ERA in 2018, 3.28 in 2020, and 3.25 in 2022. Then you look at the last three odd number seasons, 3.87 ERA in 2019, 4.63 in 2021, and 4.46 in 2023. But like the dude just goes up there and, you know, he's the accumulator on the pitching side. He's made, you know, in each of the last five full years, at least 32 starts and made 12 starts, which basically was a full season back in 2020. So he's absolutely kind of one of those guys that, you know, one of the higher floor guys out there. And you look at early ADP here, and ADP still has him for redraft, obviously, as SP10. And I put out a poll real quick today. Do you trust him as your ace? And it was close to, at least last time I looked, it was about 73% said no. So, you know, Lucas, I'll go to you first here. You know, for dynasty purposes, let's say you're in a win now mode. Would you feel comfortable with Aaron Nola as your ace in dynasty in the win now mode?
By necessity, if I had to make him my ace, that would be okay, I guess. I actually had him on a dynasty team where we won the league this year, but we had like a lot of like kind of co-aces where we had Shane McClanahan before he blew his arm out. We had Logan Gilbert, Zach Eflin, Framber Valdez. So ideally, because the ratios have been a little bit up and down on the ERA side, you don't just draft him and then wait forever. You need to supplement him a little bit. But from a volume perspective, you mentioned all that. A lot of people are hung up on the 4.46 ERA, but he doesn't get credit for having a 1.15 whip. And just every year, he's over 200 strikeouts in each full season since 2018. 66% left on base rate this year shows that he had bad luck. And I get that he's prone to the blow-up inning. I've watched him too many times against the Braves get blown up, unfortunately. But, you know, perfect SP2, ideally. But if you're waiting on your arms, he could still be an SP1 in my mind. You just want to back him up a little bit quickly. And last note, people are going to be disappointed that he did not switch teams to, you know, a St. Louis or a San Francisco. Yep. But Philadelphia's defense is improving. They're adding more athletes to the field. They're making Schwarber kind of more of a full-time DH. So his stock is not down in my book from staying with his team. It's either stays or maybe moves up a little bit because I think he's a little underrated.
Yeah, I think that's very fair assessment there. Just given, like you said, you know what the floor is. Like, mm-hmm. He's one of the higher floors in baseball. And like, if he absolutely could get back to one of those, you know, those even numbered years. Maybe he does it again. Maybe this trend continues in 2024 and he's back to like, you know, 3.23 ERA. The metrics are still pretty good. I mean, the first thing that stood out to me, Chris, here, and I'll throw it over to you, was the slug on his fastball jumped about 150 points from 356 to 505. Batting average against also jumped close, or actually exactly 50 points as well. So and maybe if he can get, you know, that back to 2022 levels, like, that'd be a big change right there. But you know, kind of same question to you, Chris. Do you still think that Nola is a dynasty ace?
The 15 team, I think so. He's as consistent as they come. I wish that he had left Philly from a fantasy standpoint, not because I want him on the Braves, but because Philly doesn't care about the defense.
Yes, because you want him on the Braves.
I mean, I did, but the fact that if he had gone to a team with much better defense behind him, then I think that we would have seen a lot of these numbers improve. He's as steady as they come. If you look at kind of look deep, he hasn't missed a start due to injury since 2017. Knock on some wood. I hope he doesn't get injured this year. But he's like as safe as Garrett Cole from that standpoint. He's made three more starts since 2018, made two more starts than Garrett Cole, and he's thrown 10 less innings. So Cole's just going a little deeper on start for start. But over that span since 2018, there's only been four starters that have gone over 1,000 total innings. So that's 2018 through 2023, and that's Garrett Cole, Aaron Nola, Jose Berrios, surprisingly, and Zach Wheeler. So the consistency is huge over that span, a 3.65 ERA, and that's significant, but also it comes with a 3.38 FIP and a 3.32 XFIP. So the performance has been there. From a WAR standpoint, I mean, few pitchers have been better over that span. just Cole, Wheeler, Scherzer, and DeGrom. So it shows you the caliber pitcher that Nola has. I know nobody gives a rip that's listening about 2018. It's like, why would we care about that? You know, look at what he's done recently. And okay, he's had two bad seasons. His two worst seasons have come in 2021 and 2023. And even over that span, we'll go those a 3-year stretch, 2021 and 2023. And Nola has the fourth highest WAR among pitchers still, behind Wheeler, Gausman, and Burns. So that just goes to show you that a down year from Nola is still really, really good. And that comes with a 4.09 ERA over those three seasons, because I've mentioned two kind of bad years. But you look, and over those years, it's really just odd luck. Weird strand rates, low BABIP, or a high BABIP, excuse me. The FIP and XFIP still look really great. A 3.31 FIP, a 3.25 XFIP over those 3 years. He doesn't walk batters. He's going to strike guys out. I feel safe with Nola. And I really do believe that maybe Philly invests a little bit more in their defense this offseason. Obviously, we'll see. Hoskins is out the door. Harper's going to play first base. They've got to figure out how to get this outfield to work. But I think it's possible that they do. And so I'm in on Nola for sure. He's a top 15 dynasty arm pretty easily for me, and maybe pushing top 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I obviously wanted him on the Red Sox as well, but that wouldn't have been a great spot for him for fantasy purposes. People have needed a good defense behind them. Red Sox have had like the worst defense for the last few years. You know, obviously more of a hitter's park with Fenway as well. So that would have been great for his fantasy value. But you know, going back to Philly, I still have him like he's in a math, like in the kind of 60 to 80 range of my rankings overall. I have this massive glob of pitchers, you know, guys like Freddie Peralta in there, Framber Valdez, Zach Wheeler, Gausman, Logan Gilbert, etc. So he's right in that cluster near the top of it. So I think right now, currently, he is my SP, I think the one, two, three, SP 13 right now, some wiggle room there. But so yeah, I'd be okay if I wanted to wait, you know, in the startup to get my arm and, you know, get a core of three or four bats first. But I would love him. I'd feel really good if I had, you know, someone like a Burns or a Gallen or someone like that as my one, and then go back with Nola as my two, because definitely buy low right now, because I think, you know, he's better than what he showed. The metrics show that. Still has the high floor, the consistency's there, everything you want from a guy that's one of your, you know, number one or number two. So definitely buy low in dynasty leagues right now. Let's go ahead and hit a quick break, and we'll be right back with several more names.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. Welcome back. Let's keep the pitching going here with another really fun arm that, you know, Lucas was put this one on the sheet. I was going to as well, as I have literally no idea where to rank this guy, because A, he's coming off his second Tommy John surgery, and B, there were some performance issues before that, you know, I was already trying to figure out how I wanted to rank him. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword here. We're looking at Walker Buehler, obviously, you know, a guy that was, you know, considered a fantasy ace, top five dynasty arm after his, you know, really good rookie year in 2018, 2.62 ERA and 137 and a third innings, whip under one. Then followed it up with, you know, ERAs in the 3.2 to 3.4 range, you know, in 2019 and 2020, 2.47 in 2021 at age 26. Like, all right, this guy's a, you know, ace over 200 innings, over 200 Ks, whip below one again. Then a 4.02 ERA leading into the second Tommy John surgery. So he's all over the place right now, Lucas, you know, both for redraft, dynasty, no matter what format you play in. You know, his value is and ranking is all over the place. So kind of how are you valuing him? Like, what are you looking at with Buehler? Do you still believe? You shying away? Where are you at?
That's a good question. There's a lot of positives, but there's some glaring negatives that just worry me around that top 100, top 115 redraft price, which surprised me being that high.
Me too. Yeah.
But you kind of alluded to the skills decline. I mean, in his heyday of 2019, he had a 24% K minus BB, super elite, but it dropped down to 15% in his last full season. He's been losing fastball velocity year after year, really since he entered into the major leagues, and coming off of his second Tommy John, in my mind, I think there'll be some serious workload issues, maybe 120, 130, 140 innings at most, I would think, just because he is going to be a free agent next year, not this winter, but the following. So I think that he's not going to want to, you know, smoke his arm off too badly and abuse himself. So for me, I'm seeing a player with some sharp decline in the skills, elite premium team context. And whenever I look at a pitcher, I obviously look at K minus BB first, but if I was to have a second metric, WHIP is another one that I go to all the time just for a quick scan. So there's some really nice positives, but there's just some alarming things about him that far outweigh it in my mind.
Yeah, I agree on WHIP, because WHIP, it's so simple, and like there's no like, you know, complicated calculation that goes into it like some of these metrics. It's just like, hey, how many base runners are you allowing per inning? I mean, which is, you know, very, very important to obviously keeping your ERA low and your value overall. So yeah, I think WHIP is still a pretty, you know, pretty decent metric to look at for sure. And, you know, Buehler, I don't know, man. Like, I'm, again, like kind of what I was alluding to before I threw it over to you. Like, I don't know where I want to rank him right now. I'm kind of like, I'm not going to have him in redraft. I agree that that price is too high. And I thought it'd be at least 50, I thought it'd probably be like 150 to 175 range. So I was surprised as well that it was as high as it was. Maybe it'll come down as we get closer to drafts. Who knows? But just with all the arms out there, I don't have any dynasty shares either, and I'm probably not going to. It's almost like I need a year to see where you're at. I kind of like a show me year. Like, what Buehler are we going to get? You know, is the performance going to be there? Can the arm hold up? You know, second Tommy John, we don't have a lot of, and we have a lot of guys that come off one Tommy John, obviously, but the list of two Tommy John surgery arms is, you know, a lot smaller of a list. So yeah, I'm definitely in a wait and see mode here with Buehler. And if that means I miss a potential buy low window, then I probably will. I don't feel great about this one. I don't know. Clegg, where are you at on Buehler?
Yeah, he's a really odd one to even think about, like, ranking and valuing. Obviously, in redraft, he's a pretty big risk, and we've seen him kind of go all over the board in FBC drafts from 60 to 204, so pretty wide range, coming in with a 105 ADP. And so I guess there's a pro and a con. The pro would be that Buehler's cost is probably the lowest that it's ever been and might ever be to acquire in a dynasty league. So if you would like to take that route and see where it goes, it's not going to cost you a ton. The cons might outweigh the pro, though, that it's just a cheap cost, because we did see regression. We saw second Tommy John surgery, which, you know, those are harder to come back from. And, you know, there's some interesting things with the fastball that I just don't love, and the fastball location and ultimately the shape on it, which, you know, you have to wonder, like, the game has evolved since 2021 he pitched some in 2022 as well, but the game has evolved a little bit. And, you know, what kind of fastball is he going to come throwing? Like, what does that look like? And all those things have to be, like, taken into effect. The velo was down in 2021 and 2022 from previous years, so that's worth noting pretty much on all pitches. So what Walker Buehler do we get? I'd say that's still to be determined. And it's going to have to be a pretty cheap acquisition cost for me to want to grab him in either redraft or dynasty. I'm probably staying away around pick 100, because there's a lot of other arms I like in a redraft league. But if you can go out and trade for him fairly cheap in a dynasty league, I might be willing to take a shot, just kind of see where does it go. Yeah, I don't know. He's a tough one for sure.
Where do you think cheap is, though, Chris? Like, what would you be okay giving up to get a Walker Buehler right now?
I mean, let's just see in my rankings, like, what range would I move? Like,
would you move? Let's go with one of his teammates. Would you move an Emmett Sheehan for him?
Yeah, I think I would. I like Sheehan, but I'd make that move. That's about that range I'm looking at. Like, there's other guys in that range that I have, like Bryce Miller, Hunter Brown, Taj Bradley, Sheehan, Brian Baez, Woodruff. I don't know. Like, you know, all of them have concerns like Buehler does. So, like, we've seen Buehler be an ace before. He's eaten a lot of innings before. So, can he do it again? Yeah, maybe. It is tough. Like, that's tough because, you know, like, where do you value him? Like, I don't know. I think I'd make those moves, probably.
What about Shane Bieber?
Oh, yeah. I think I'd make the Bieber move.
Yeah, me too.
Bieber's really weird. Like, everybody's just like, I'm so shocked how off people are of Bieber. I still like Bieber, but man, like, everybody, like, thinks he died or something.
What was the – who's the player that got hurt and then they held up – like they were acting like he died in the dugout. They were, like, holding up his jersey. What,
Eloy.
Eloy, thank you. Yes. That you made me think of that. Oh, yeah. There was the spring training injury when he tore his shoulder trying to rob that meaningless fly ball in spring training. And they acting like he died or something. But, yeah, Bieber's another one. We probably could have included Bieber on this list, too. Obviously, the velo has been way down for a while. And he has, obviously, outside of that one, the really good year – in 2020, he hasn't really been, you know, elite outside of that. But with Buehler too, like, you know, you kind of alluded to this, both of you, K rate, you know, whiff rate, not missing bats, that was dipping for a while, even before, even before 2022. He peaked at 29.2% K rate in 2019. And the walk rate through all this is pretty consistent, 5-7% range. Dipped to 28.6 in 2020. That's only half a percentage point down. But then went down to 26%, 2.5% drop in 2021, then plummeted to 21.2%. And obviously, if you want to be an impact arm, like 21.2% just ain't going to cut it. That's, you know, that's mid-rotation guy. That's, you know, waiver wire guy in shallower leagues. So, and obviously, Buehler's better than that. But I want to see him get back to missing bats like he used to do. I mean, get back to, you know, the whiff rate getting up, you know, 28-29% like it was during peak years. It's down to 24.8%. Zone contact was going up. So, yeah, it was a lot of trends in the wrong direction. So, let's see if he can correct those. Moving back to the hitting side of things here with the ALCS MVP, Adelis Garcia, who's been a pretty polarizing player for a while now. You know, broke out in 2021, his first full year with the Texas Rangers after coming over from the St. Louis Cardinals a couple years before that via trade. And, you know, 31-16 that year, but obviously just super high strikeouts, only hit 243, sub-300 OBP. But, you know, average has kind of been living in that 245-250 range. OBP has actually ticked up to 328 this past year, which is nice to see. You know, 39 home runs, like coming off a career year across the board, career high in runs. And home runs, 39, 107 RBI. Didn't steal as many bags as he did the previous year. Went 27-25 last year, 39-9 this year. But really, overall, his best year. Still 29 years old as well. So, Chris, you know, like, obviously, the strikeouts are still high. But when you look at him in this day and age, he's settled into, like, that 27-28% range. Yeah, last 2 years, 27-9, 27-7. That's not terrible. Walk rate jumped to 10.3% this past year. Is he, you know, like, what, top 50 right now? I think you got to put him in that discussion. He's still only 20 or 30 years old, so not too old, but is he top 50 for you now?
Yeah, he is, but I think he's a sell high personally, just because all the hype. I know the injury kind of puts a little damper on that, but I think that he will probably come back. He'll be back by the beginning of the season. I haven't seen anything that would suggest he wouldn't be ready for spring training. So he's really interesting from the standpoint of, I just think you capitalize on the hype, which is why he's a tough rank, because I think that maybe people are willing to go a little higher on him than I am. And when that happens, like, I'll just cash out on the player. He's got a near top 40 ADP for redraft. I'd guess that most people probably value him there for dynasty. But I think the value's peaked, in my opinion. I mean, 39 home runs. He only stole 9 bases, which is interesting. But we could end up seeing, you know, him just stop stealing. The sprint speed has kind of turned in the wrong direction each of the last 3 years. So maybe he's sold out for power a little more and sacrificed some of that speed. And the hit tool the OBP is not going to be great. I just guess we see him regress closer to what he was in 2022, which was a really good player, but maybe without the speed. 300 OBP on the dot, 250 average on the dot, 450 slug. Like, I think that's the kind of player that's good, but I think this kind of player you can cash out on and get a good return. And he probably returns top 100 value pretty easily, but I'm not sure that he returns the value of what you could get for him in a trade.
Now, I'm going to loop this back around to one of our earlier players. Chris, you have Adelis Garcia right now. Someone in your league comes up to you and offers you Mike Trout. You taking it?
I don't know. I mean, possibly. Like, it both have their warts, and obviously I put both on the list, so maybe, but I'm not confident in either.
I know. I think I would rather have, oh man, I want to say, like, the brain says Garcia, the heart says Trout. It's a tough battle right now because obviously the upside with Trout's higher, but is he playing enough to get past the production kind of level that Garcia's at right now? I don't know. It's a tough one. I do think he's a sell high. I still think he can still be pretty damn good. And, you know, like 30 home runs, 10 steals, 250, you know, something like that. Obviously, plenty of runs and RBIs. The Texas Rangers lineup to be pretty damn good moving forward. And they get a full year of Evan Carter. And they get a, you know, Wyatt Langford coming up at some point, probably even opening day. So the lineup's going to get even better. You know, another year of Josh Young getting better. That's going to be a scary lineup. You know, maybe as good as Atlanta's, but in the AL, that's going to be a pretty damn good lineup. But Lucas, where are you at with Adelis Garcia? You think he's top 50 overall?
Not for me, but it's getting harder to be against this guy because I was not in favor of him last year, and he burned me really bad. But I'm not gonna go back to that well next year. If he works out, great, but it's gonna be on someone else's team. I've just seen enough of these profiles where you're flirting with 30% K rate, you know, highly relying on athleticism. It'll be his age 31 season next year. And the counting stats are just going to come down from 108 and 107. That does not repeat. The 9 steals, he's not even like he's going to, you know, be flirting with the 20, you know, steal pace. So I think Chris nailed it when he said to sell him off, because whenever you do trade him this offseason, people are going to look at these 2023 numbers for better or for worse. They're going to affect their opinion on him. And I think you'll be able to get more this year than you will any other time, because I do see some slippage. But this guy is breaking a lot of different rules where he strikes out 30-some-odd% of the time, but still has a 16% barrel rate and is in a loaded lineup. So he's really tricky, but he's not my kind of player, so I wouldn't want him, especially given he costs a 44 average draft position. So,
yeah, that's pretty high. I think he could be top 50 for the next handful of years, but yeah, I think there's a better chance that it kind of bottoms out a little bit more towards top 100 than, you know, repeating this year, which he was probably, what, top 25-ish player this past year. I think closer to top 100 is a more likely outcome than, you know, another top 25 season. So, yeah, I would lean towards selling right now. Next guy, kind of a similar, just exciting but very flawed profile. A lot of blue, a lot of red on Savant. Name I throw on the list with Christopher Morel. 24-year-old with the Cubs, you know, both years so far with the Cubs, barrel rate above 13%, was at 16% this past year, 92.1 average exit velo, 50% hard hit rate. But this is a guy that has struck out over 31% each of his 2 years, can't hit off-speed pitches, you know, below 190 each of the last 2 years, can mash fastballs. Like, there's no issue with him hitting fastballs, but it's just a really weird profile, almost kind of like Garcia's, where obviously the contact rates are low, whiff rate very high, 37-38%. Obviously, I mentioned the K rate already, but it's just a really fun profile where the quality of contact is very good, pretty good sprint speed as well, 81st percentile sprint speed. And he went 26-6 in 429 plate appearances this year, 16-10 in 425 plate appearances last year. So he's got 42-16 total in 854 games, which is right around like a, you know, 32, 33 homer, you know, 10 or so steal pace or 12 steals. So obviously the upside is there. I think the Cubs lineup, you know, it's pretty solid lineup around him. You know, I got some young players coming up over the next year or two as well. So I think that'll continue to be a pretty good lineup. But kind of similar thoughts on Like, could he have like an Adelis Garcia year upcoming? Sure. Could he go, you know, high 30s home runs, you know, double digit steals? Sure. And I think the slash line is pretty much in line with where Garcia is, but he hasn't obviously gotten to that level yet. So that's why he's a hard one for me to rank. Like, I could see him being a top 100 guy at this point next year or outside the top 200. You know, another guy that could be, you know, demoted to AAA at some points, or just losing playing time because of the approach. And obviously the peaks and valleys here are going to be pretty prevalent both ways. Chris, where are you at a Morel? Like, is he a guy that you'd want to invest in? And where do you have him ranked? It's fun to see where people have him ranked. Is he in the top 200 for you right now?
I haven't pulled up. If he is, he's barely. I don't think he's going to have a job in Chicago. Like, they've shown the willingness to spend. Actually, he's not my top 200. He's 265 for me. I just don't think that they're going to play him regularly. If they want to win, like, yeah, he's a fun bat. He's got some fun upside. But I'm kind of in the camp that the Cubs are going to spend a lot of money this offseason, try to build a contender. And I'm not really sure he's part of that picture, which might be crazy to say. But I think there's some serious risk that Morel is not an everyday player in 2024. And that would just absolutely destroy his value. I mean, he doesn't make contact at all. He strikes out way too much. And when he makes contact, he's hitting the ball on the ground, you know, quite often. His sweet spot percentage is really low. So it's not ideal launch angles at all. So I'm just pretty out on Morel, and I'd rather get off the train now than, you know, see his value tank.
Yeah, he's one that I put out some tweets from the Tool Shed account, and he's one that I did. And I said, where do you currently value Christopher Morel for Dynasty? 6% said top 120. 22% top 160, 41% top 200, and 31% not top 200. So I think that you average it out, you know, probably late back end 200 range for the most part on average, which I think is fair. I think that's where I have him in that 200 range. Again, he could jump up 100 spots. He could jump down 100 spots. You know, you mentioned, Chris, like, where does he play? Is he just a, you know, super utility guy that, you know, can carry your team for a few weeks and then kill your team for a few weeks in fantasy? He's really hard to eat. That's why I threw him on here. But Lucas, what are your thoughts on Christopher Morel?
Yeah, I think Chris did a good job by highlighting his risk in the playing time. Obviously, the strikeout rate is not going to allow him to become a regular either if that continues at this rate, more than likely. But this is where, if you play in multiple dynasty leagues, there is a huge variance in opinions. You have some people that put him top 100. You have some people that say he's not even a top 300, 400 guy. So this is the perfect player where if you can get him for a couple of draft picks or a few prospects that you're okay moving, if the Cubs do get serious about winning and move this guy for some sort of pitching, he's got some elite power in his bat. 97th, a 97 mile an hour average exit velocity on fly balls and line drives is 13th in the major leagues out of 133 qualified bats there. So if this guy does move to a third division team, he does have 30 home run upside. And if you can finagle him away for not that much of a price, I think it's a good gamble, but you can't really draft him onto your redraft team, you know, as an outfield three or outfield four or anything along those lines. You need to make him as more of a lottery ticket and just see if it works.
Yeah, I had one share of Morel. I think it was in 30 Rock, actually. I kind of had to bow out of that league. I had to trim leagues last year. But, and I remember back when he like first exploded, I had several offers for him and held on to him. Obviously, it doesn't matter anymore. I'm not in the league, like I said, but kind of wish I had traded him because I could have gotten a pretty penny when he first exploded and had like that 3-4 week stretch where he was like a top 10 fantasy player over that stretch. But yeah, he's going to have those. If he has the playing time, he's going to have those months where he's top 10 player and other months where he's not even a top 500 player. This is, and we've already seen that. We've seen the peaks and valleys already and how massive each of those can be for Morel. So yeah, he's definitely an interesting player. Let's end this episode with one last Chicago Cub, a little bit more established guy, Cody Bellinger. Well, currently, or was on the Cubs. We'll see where he ends up moving forward. But still only, you know, in his late 20s, coming off back-to-back just terrible years in 2021, 2022, hit 165 in 2021. I wonder if there's ever been another player that hit below 200 one year and then 2 years later hit over 300. while having, you know, a reasonable amount of plate appearances in each season. That's just ridiculous. But this past year, 307, 356, 525, 26 home runs, 20 steals, scored 95 runs and 556 plate appearances. This is one, Chris, you put on the list here. I mean, he's going, you know, around top 50, I think top 50 or so ADP. Correct me if I'm wrong. And obviously, Dynasty, I think the value, perceived value, is back to that range. Are you buying it? Or is he another guy kind of like Garcia that you'd be looking to sell right now?
I'm buying Bellinger more than Garcia. I think that the landing spot will be pretty telling of, you know, ultimately the future value. But my concern is more that he goes to like New York, which would be a great ballpark fit, but can his mental state handle the pressure to play? I mean, honestly, like we've seen him be a highly volatile player and the mental aspect is so huge in the game. And yeah, I just wonder if Bellinger went to New York, could he handle the media? That's a tough place to play. And so I think that's a valid question as to where he lands. But no, more in a general sense, like I'm more in on Bellinger than Garcia just because when he's younger, we've seen him do it. Obviously, he went through those slumps, but we've seen him do it, you know, several times throughout his career and be a high-end performer. And he's really kind of evolved his game. Like he's not the hitter that he was in 2019 when he hit 47 home runs. But he's really sacrificed power for contact, and he's now found a good middle ground where he doesn't need to sacrifice either. Like, it's just making both work. So, you know, I like Bellinger. I think the landing spot will kind of be telling with him.
Yeah, when I was putting together my first base ranks for 2024, and I was kind of at this big spreadsheet where, you know, last year's stats, advanced metrics, my projections, and let's look at the barrel rate for just like the top 10 first baseman that I had him on my spreadsheet. Like all the rest of the top 10 was like 11, 12 or higher percent. And then he was down at like, I think it was like 6.1% or something like that. The quality contact wasn't terrible, but it wasn't good either. It's kind of like kind of meh, kind of middle of the road. So I do think there's going to be a little bit of a power regression coming. And obviously he's a good athlete. So I don't think what he did was entirely fluky. Yeah. I do feel a little bit safer with him than Garcia as well, but on the same kind of thought process, I also think he's more of a sell than a buy right now. Is I think kind of like what I was saying with Garcia, there's a better chance that his value goes down this year than up, at least in my opinion. But I don't know. Lucas, are you a Bellinger guy? Where are you at on him?
You know, one thing that I really value in redraft and in dynasty is stability, knowing what you're going to kind of get. And this guy had two total bottom out years where he was unplayable. And then obviously coming off of a really nice year where kind of, as Chris alluded to, he reinvented himself, but he did it at the cost of his hard hit rate and his barrel rate and his average exit velocity dropped 2 miles an hour. So just in general, I think that he's kind of at a high point. And for me to invest in that, it's just not something I want to do because you're buying high a lot. So I think that he's going to slip back maybe 20-25% on what he did last year. Still be a decent player, but just a little bit too costly for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But all right, that's going to wrap up this episode. I mean, we had 8 more names on the list, some younger guys, but instead of going 2 hours, we're going to split this up and do a part 2 with Lucas. That'll be out later this week, probably on Friday. Obviously not going to do Thursday because of the holiday, but Lucas, thanks for joining us for part 1 here. We'll have you back, you know, in the next couple of days for part 2. But before we get out of here, you want to just let everyone know where they can find your work and what you got going on over at DC Dynasty.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can follow my work on Twitter at LucasBeery33. My website is DC Dynasty. Right now, I'm going to be focusing more on draft champions types of leagues, but I do some dynasty content over there as well. And I'm going to be kicking off an article series looking at late round starting pitchers by division. So that's my next project.
Oh, that's always fun. I was looking at the late round targets. That's always a fun topic, no matter if it's redraft dynasty. But yeah, definitely go check out everything Lucas has got going on. Obviously, great, great player, both redraft and dynasty, and a great baseball mind as well. So definitely recommend his content. And obviously, check out Chris's work over at the Dynasty Dugout, my work at Toolshed Fantasy, along with Roto Baller and FTN as well. And we'll be back in a few days with part 2. But until then, everyone take care.
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.